the show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, back for another episode of The Boundless Show with a very fun roundtable group with me today. But let me give you a little clue as to the rest of this week's show. First up, our question today is going to be answered by two of our focus counselors, James Grosbeck and Sandy Jansen, and they're going to be helping a girl who is heading towards marriage talk about when she gets there, she kind of wants to move, and what are kind of the qualifiers for that, What should that look like? And does she have to be in agreement with her spouse? And what are some of the things that they should actually look at? So that's going to be some good stuff. And then our culture segment this week is an interview with Bill and Pam Farrell. They are the spaghetti and waffle people, for those of you that think the name sounds a little bit familiar. And they are the authors of the brand new book, The 10 Best Decisions a Single Can Make. And they're going to be talking to us about kind of that season of life that we're in, being single, and how do you grow kind of in that season when it comes to hardship or sacrifice, the whole iron sharpening iron type of dynamic. So what can we do now to prepare for our next season? That's kind of a theme here at Boundless, so that'll be good. But for today's roundtable, we have a couple friends back. Obviously, Martha's here. Hey, Martha.
Hello, Lisa.
Here she is. We have Andrew Hess back in the studio. Andrew, welcome.
Thanks.
Brother
good to
Andrew.
Be here.
Good to have you. As always. And we have a new friend, Adrian Forster. Adrian, welcome.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Another single gal. Very fun to have you. So there are some of us here at Focus. There are single girls here at Focus. So you just keep hearing these new names. Andrew, we just bring him back, whatever. So, no, we have more single guys too here at Focus. But so we're going to talk about time and kind of a stewardship of time issue. You know, we've talked about money in the past. We've had special guests on the show to talk about helping us as single young adults kind of manage our money. But when it comes to time, this is interesting because I've been thinking about this in recent weeks, this whole idea of why do I feel like with all the technology we have, I'm busier than ever and I'm just frantic and I can't keep up with stuff. And all it is an excuse to do more work and be connected with more people whom ultimately maybe I shouldn't be connecting with. I don't know. It's just weird. So there are just more people in my sphere, more things to do. And the things that I really want to do and feel I should be doing, serving and giving and stuff like that, are just kind of crowded in the midst of all that. So I want to throw this out to you guys. How do you guys feel when you think of your average week and just the time that you spend and how you spend it and where your priorities are? If you had to do a little assessment now, where would you land?
Lisa, I do think that time is one of those things that we don't think about a lot. You know, life just moves, and it is really easy to get really busy. I think right now when I think about my time, I think, you know, I'm kind of living out the work hard, play hard, and then crash. And so I feel like I'm always busy doing something, and so I have to be really intentional about watching how am I spending my time, and are there things that are taking up too much time? And one of the things, as we start, that I do like to think about time in terms of stewardship. You know, usually the word stewardship comes up when we talk about money, but I feel like time, you know, is something that the Lord is going to ask us to account for. You know, how do we use it? And that doesn't mean that we're always just work, but that the Bible gives us a model of here's how we should think about our time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another thing is that time isn't an actual tangible thing to look at objectively. And I hardly ever consider looking at my time and how I spend it each week objectively. And so it's pretty easy to just go with the flow, not think about it, get into a routine or a habit, and then continue in that instead of actually looking down, mapping it out kind of like you would with finances or something, as you were talking about stewardship. You don't really do that because you don't see it that way.
Yeah, well, I think there is kind of that. I mean, I think it's good to put on the table right now the fact that a lot of people think, well, you know, you guys have it totally different because you're younger and you're single and you just have your careers, you don't have families, so obviously you've got all this time, which I've always just, it just drives me nuts. I'm like, ah! You know, because I feel like I don't have time. But when I look at my schedule, and you know, just a couple weeks ago, I was challenged to, because I'm going to go through a refi on my house and do a bunch of stuff. I started writing down all my expenses for the month, and first of all, I'm completely blazed away by the price of gas and how much I'm spending on gas. So that was extremely depressing,
painful,
very, yeah, very painful. And I'm going to need to just start hoofing it around a little bit more, I think, which is sad.
You're going to get a horse?
I know. Which is what. It's sad because it's like you think of how communities used to be planned, and now it really is. I mean, the way our city's built, you just got to drive around. We don't even have good buses, so it's depressing. Anyway, so I started writing down all my expenses and just taking account of those, and then thought to myself, okay, what if I wrote down how I spent my time? And I haven't started doing that yet, and I'm a little bit leery about doing it because I know that there are probably some things that I could work on. And I think to myself, you know, I have friends, and I don't understand how this happens. You know, basically, how you spend your time shows where your priorities are. I mean, I just think that's the case. You're always going to make time for what you want to make time for. So I know people that follow like 4 or 5 reality shows a week. And I'm just like, how is this happening? But I don't do that. So I don't watch any TV. So I'm like, what am I doing? You know? And I do realize that one thing that has really kind of captured my time that I think is just crazy is the possession of an iPhone. And so I have, like, I can't stand in a grocery line anymore without checking my email. Like, I can't just have 2 minutes alone with myself anymore without just checking stuff. And I know Facebook has kind of gotten into that pattern as well, in that I'm always like, you know, okay, well, someone comments and then I have to check that, and someone and I'm like, wow, how much time out of my day does that take? A lot, I think.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I feel like, you know, I have an iPhone as well, and it is a huge temptation to just let that thing just. I mean, I'm sitting at my desk and I have, you know, my computer and then a laptop because I love Macs, and so I have to have a Mac computer to write on, and then my iPhone. And so when I get an email, 3 things pop up. You know, like for this broadcast, 3 notices popped up, and I was like, oh, good thing I was never going to forget that.
Yeah.
But I think it is this. It can become this thing that becomes controlling. And you know, I've had friends who have said, oh, I'm going to give up Facebook for a week or a month, or give up technology for a while. And I think that can be helpful. I mean, we want to make sure that we're using the technology, and that the technology isn't using us. Mm-hmm. You know, that we don't get to a point where we're so dependent on it that we couldn't function without it. But again, recognizing it is a helpful tool, and like so many things, you know, you can use it well and it's really helpful, but then it can turn on you, and all of a sudden, you know, you feel like, I can't do anything without my phone, or if I lose my phone, my life falls apart.
Mm-hmm. I think you also kind of lose touch with reality and the people in your reality with those tools that are supposed to be so helpful. I kind of have a sad story about that too. I went out to eat with a really large group of people a couple weeks ago, and I didn't know very many people in the group, and it was a big table, a rectangle shaped table, and I was sitting with a friend, and we were looking at the menu, and everyone was kind of thinking what they wanted to order, get their drinks going. And then all of a sudden, the table just kind of quieted, and I looked up from the menu, and every single person at the table was on their phone. And I think one was a Facebook, one was a game, one was text messaging. And so my friend and I looked at each other and thought, what is this? That here we are, like new people, getting to know each other. We're trying to bond on this church trip, and everyone's on their cell phone. And you know, where's the community in this? You know, I just thought it was interesting. And we made them aware of that, and they put them down and said sorry. And then we got to talking and had a good time eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the things that shows that technology has come up so fast. I mean, if we think about our lives 10 years ago, I mean, 10 years ago, I didn't have a cell phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, they existed, but it was like the Zach Morris, like huge thing that, you know, you put up your head. But things are changing so quickly that etiquette doesn't catch up, you know? And so there is no etiquette. Like, there's nobody saying, oh, that's not an appropriate use of technology. And so so we have to kind of find our own way without these standards that kind of say, oh, well, that's not appropriate. And we can kind of lean on, well, everybody knows that you shouldn't use cell phones like that. And so I do think that as we progress, that it's going to be important for us in our own minds to have convictions about, you know, when I'm with somebody, like, I'm not going to be on my phone. I'm not going to be distracted. I think, you know, one of my personal principles is be where you are. you know? And so if, especially if you're with people, that's just rude to say, you know, the people that are on the end, other end of my phone, they are more important than you are, you know, because that's kind of what you communicate when you do that. So I think that's something that's going to be important is as our generation, you know, continues to use technology and it gets better and better, you know, who knows in 10 years what it'll be. We probably won't have phones. It'll probably just, I don't know, be chips in our heads or something.
You know, Lisa, you mentioned the whole idea of singles have more time than people who are married. And that's obviously not true because we all have 24 hours in a day. But I think one advantage we do have is we can spend that time on as we wish. Mm-hmm. We're not, you know, don't have to have dinner on the table necessarily at 6 o'clock or have to go to bed by 9 o'clock because the kids are in bed. We have the freedom to be flexible of if you want to sit down and watch TV for a couple hours, you have to work, you know, and wash the dishes later. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an advantage that we have, a perk.
Yeah, it is. And it's funny. And that's why I think it's even more convicting when I look at my day or my week and I'm like, okay, so what? Because I always feel I have things that are on my list that I have to do and somehow I have to fit them in. And like I was saying with the phone and stuff, I'm constantly working now because I will check my email all the time and I will respond to work emails, whether it's 10 p.m. or whether it's 6 a.m. or and I can just do that all the time now. So it's like part
Why?
Of my
yeah.
I don't know. I do not know because I don't like it having I don't like it to be unopened and unresponded to. I always want to clean it up, you know, so I want to like deal with stuff. And like if I can, you know, as I'm getting ready for work, answer 6 or 7 emails and come into work and have those less, you know, I'm just like, oh, my goodness, I'm on such a great start, you know, or whatever. I don't know. It's just nuts. Yes. And so I think that for me is something where I feel like I have to draw a line and find a way to do that. Another just quirky, funny thing is on my phone, I play Words with Friends, which is like the little phone version of Scrabble, you know, and you can play it. Okay, so yesterday, here I have all kinds of things I have to accomplish. I'm trying to refinance my house. I'm getting my tax stuff finalized. I'm doing all this. And I'm like, ooh, that's right. I need to remember to fit in my turn on Words with Friends. So that all of a sudden became something in my to-do list, you know, and I'm like, how nuts is it when I have that as like a thing that has to be accomplished? So it's not okay. Something has to be done about it. And I'm going to work on it. So all that to say, what then do we want to do now? What are some things that we want to make priorities that we want to fit into our schedule, whether it's this year, whether it's something that we see coming up in the next few months, whether it's a person that we want to make a priority? What are some things that you aren't doing now that you want to do, that you want to sacrifice your time for?
I think that one of the things I want to get back to is something that practice that I started in college, and it's actually, I mean, it's kind of involves Sabbath keeping, and it's actually taking 24 hours where I don't do anything that I would consider to be work, and I know that, you know, there are some different, you know, beliefs on, you know, do we still keep the Sabbath or don't we, or how that works, but, you know, from my personal experience, when I was in college, I had a really busy semester, you know, one of those 18-hour semesters that nobody should ever try to accomplish. Yeah. And I did, and I got about a month in, and I met with my mentor at the time and said, I don't know how I'm going to do this. Like, I don't know how I'm going to get all this done. And he said, are you taking a Sabbath? And I kind of laughed. I was like, no, I need more time, not less. Yeah. And he said, no, like I've found that if you take 24 hours and you just say, I'm going to honor the Lord and rest and intentionally rest during that time, you'll be able to be more productive the other 6 days. And I found it to be true for myself. I started intentionally doing that, and it wasn't necessarily like sun. It wasn't just, you know, Sunday. Usually it would be noon on Saturday till noon on Sunday. Like that was the 24 hours that I carved out. But I said, Lord, I'm going to honor you this way. And it was amazing how much more productive I was the other 6 days, you know, and I don't say that's a magical thing or, you know, that if you try that, it'll work for you too. But for me at that time in my life, it was saying, Lord, you're the God of my time and you see all these things I have to do. And so I'm going to honor you by resting one day. And it was amazing how much more productive I could be the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm. I think on the flip side of that is, I don't know if busyness is something that I struggle with as much as maybe being a little bit more spontaneous of if a friend wants to do something all of a sudden to be open to that instead of, because my first hope is usually I'll have something on the calendar for 2 weeks and I can prepare for it and be mentally ready. So there's a little bit of that too with time of being open to the surprises.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I kind of am the opposite of that. I'll always be the one who, you know, something comes up and I'll be like, oh yeah, totally, I'm going to fit that in, you know, and then other mm-hmm. stuff that I felt like, you know, yeah. I should have been doing maybe didn't get done, didn't happen. Yeah. But the one thing I have done well with is Sunday. And I think I've benefited a little bit from some legalism growing up. So, you know, it's like you didn't go unless you needed a life-saving medicine. You didn't shop on Sunday. You didn't, you know, you just did church stuff, basically. And I found that in sticking with that and trying to shed a little bit of the attitude around it, but in sticking with that, it frees me up to do all church prayer on Sundays, which my church has, you know, where everyone else is like, oh my goodness, I need to get ready for the week. I don't have time for this. I don't have time. It allows me to make that a priority. I try to do a few things differently. Like I try to only listen to Christian music on Sundays, which is just a weird thing that I do to kind of make the day a little bit different, because we know that the rest of my week can be a very big hodgepodge of musical styles. So, so I try to do that and just kind of set that apart a little bit and try to and definitely, in fact, this Sunday I think I didn't have my phone up the whole day.
Good job.
I know. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, working on it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I like it about, you know, having priorities and knowing how you're spending your time, like you had mentioned, I actually call that life auditing. And like once a month I'll just take a calendar and just write down, okay, here's what I'm committing time to. And sometimes if I feel like I'm out of whack, I'll actually put hours to stuff. Like, okay, here's how many hours I spent sleeping. Here's how many hours I spent eating. Here's how many hours I spent with friends, working. And just trying to get a feel of, okay, is my life out of balance somewhere? And then kind of, you know, showing that to God and saying, is this how you want me managing my time? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really good practice. You know, if listeners are out there and they feel like, you know, this is really convicting, what do I do? That's a good place to start, is to kind of have a baseline. Okay, here's where I am, and here are some steps I'm going to take to work on it. Because you look at the life of Jesus, he was busy. Like mm-hmm. he wasn't probably busy in the sense that we are, but he was doing a lot of things, and he was busy enough that to spend time with his Father, he needed to give up sleep. You know, mm-hmm. that blows me away about Jesus, that he gave up sleep, which he knew he needed in order to function, and spent that time in prayer. Like he would just wander away and spend the night in prayer, and that was his best use of time. And I'm like, wow, that is, I mean, where does that put my priority for prayer at? You know, if Jesus was so busy and yet still carving out that time and even giving up sleep when he needed to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and he also discipled others. I mean, he mm-hmm. replicated, you know, his efforts and his passions. And the real purpose of discipleship is to be able to do that, build those relationships and infuse that passion in others so that they can go and do that as well.
Absolutely.
What do you guys, do you feel that you guys have enough time right now? How are you doing when it comes to like serving, whether in the church or building relationships or doing things that you really feel you're called to do?
I'm horrible at double booking myself. Mm-hmm. And they're all things that I love to do, and they're things that I feel passionate about. And, you know, I have this group of friends that does this and this group of friends that does this. And so I think part of what I want to do is serve all of them, and why not? And so Saturday, maybe I sign up to do one project for 2 hours on Saturday afternoon, and then realize, oh no, I'm also doing something else Saturday evening. And I think that's a very difficult thing that I'm having to learn, how to set boundaries for mm-hmm. those things, boundaries for my time, boundaries for me even on what I'm doing in those specific projects. Is this really what the Lord is calling me to do, or is this me kind of jumping at it? But yeah, that's definitely something I struggle with, is kind of overbooking my time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I agree. I mean, I think that in the last 6 months, there's been a couple of opportunities that, you know, within the church and doing ministry that I've had to step back from, and it was stuff that I enjoyed doing. But it was kind of out of this thought that I need to make sure that I'm doing everything well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was at a point where I was working two part-time jobs and then teaching another class and then doing some volunteer stuff, leading small groups and different things. And it was just too much. Like all of them were good things and yeah. I loved doing all of them. But I felt like I was just kind of drying up. Like it was mm-hmm. like I have nothing to give if I don't have that me time. And I think that's one of the things that the freedom that we need to offer folks is it is okay to take time for yourself. It is okay to say, okay, I'm going to carve time out of my week where it's just recharge time, where it's just me time, where it's time where I'm going to, you know, get alone with the Lord and just recharge my batteries. That's okay, because there is kind of this idol of busyness. I call it an idol on purpose because mm-hmm. sometimes we feel like, oh, I just want to do, and I want to be busy. And if we're not careful, we end up not doing anything really well. And so for me, one of my priorities is I want to be involved in the right number of things that I can do everything as best I can. And if I feel like I'm spreading myself too thin, then I need to ask, okay, what things might the Lord be asking me to step back from?
Mm-hmm. I think there's the mistake, too, of feeling that doing a bunch of things because we're doing them in or for the church makes it better than something else. And I think that's something I've been convicted of, is I'm so busy serving on committees at church and doing all these things at church that one of my goals this year is to make a non-Christian friend. I mean, how sad is that? I work at Focus on the Family. I go to all my little church things. And so I'm like, you know, I have friends that are not here in town that I'm still in contact with who don't know the Lord and I pray for and I have family members and stuff like that. But so one thing I decided I'm going to do is I just got off of a committee, and so instead of getting on another one, I'm going to spend some time this summer, as it gets nicer, prayer walking my neighborhood and just praying for my neighbors, and because a lot of them will come out, you know, in the summer and in the evenings, be out in their yards or whatever. And so then as God gives me opportunities to just start talking to people, and so to make that a priority instead of just getting into another thing where I'm driving across town to church to go do something there and then find that I'm not really building the relationships, I guess, with that. But because I think the giftedness issue is huge. You know, usually young adults either you start using your gifts and then everyone notices that and then they're like, oh my goodness, so here's another thing you can do and another thing. Or it's the opposite is true, where young adults aren't using their gifts and then they're just stagnating. And we were just studying the parable of the talents in church and Sunday school on Sunday. And I mean, it's true. I mean, really, the master was furious when the servant went and buried the talent that he had. And it was, mm-hmm. you know, completely, there was no return on it, obviously, because he did nothing with it. And so I think there's a good balance there. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, that reminds me of, you know, a message that I just heard, you know, by a prominent pastor. And he was talking about resting and resting well, and he kind of he was really challenging on the topic, specifically on video games, but on all entertainment, on how sometimes we think that's rest, you know, that you know, whenever we're not doing work, we're just, you know, doing some form of entertainment. And I think for men particularly, you know, our temptation can be to, you know, to play video games. And while I don't think video games are sinful, his point was that they can be stupid, mm-hmm. and that it's a waste of time, that, mm-hmm. that you're doing all this work and it doesn't matter at all, you mm-hmm. know, that nobody gets to heaven and gets rewards for being the best at World of Warcraft or whatever your game is. and I'm talking to myself, mm-hmm. you know, too, because I, you know, grew up enjoying playing those games with my friends and things. But I look back and I think, you know, that is wasted time. And we really need to think about, what does it mean to really rest? Mm-hmm. You know, what does it mean to rest the way the Lord rests? Mm-hmm. You know, is it just sitting quietly and kind of watching paint dry? Or is mm-hmm. it, you know, is it prayer? Or what does rest really mean?
Right. Because people use that. I think that's often used as an excuse, is the whole, I need to check out. And people do that with TV, too. And they're like, I just need to veg, or I just need to check out. And I'm like, really? Where is that biblical? I mean, I don't know that we're supposed to be checking out. Yeah. Isn't that like a foothold for Satan? I mean, last time I checked, I mean, I don't think that's the best. But so any action steps? What are you guys doing from here as you head into spring to rearrange your schedules or make what's your schedule? How's it going to look different a month from now than it is now, based on thinking about this?
It's interesting. Just last night I was at my small group, and one of the leaders approached me about becoming one of the co-leaders this summer. And it's a little bit scary to think, well, that's a big responsibility to take on, and I won't have as much free time. And I don't know, you know, I can make up tons of excuses. But I think just thinking about this more of, wow, that could really be a good use of my time and mm-hmm. way to influence people. And mm-hmm. so.
And look at all the notice you got. That's good. That should resonate with you.
It's true. I know. It's not like I have to start tomorrow, so it's perfect.
That's good. Very good. How about you, Adrian?
Oh, when I think about summer, my first thought is fun, go places, do things. But I really think that something that I feel convicted to is really being able to set, I kind of talked about this earlier, being able to set boundaries and try to objectively look at how I spend my time and say, okay, Lord, I have this do you want me to do this or not? Okay, next, I have this on my agenda. Do you want me to do this or not? Because I really tend to jump into things. But, you know, the Lord wants us to consider and pray for and ask for his advice, his discernment. And I don't always do that. I'm not very quick to jump to that because I think it's a good thing already. So part of what I want to do as summer comes closer is really ask the Lord to show me what he wants me to be involved in and then give me the grace to do it, whether that is, you know, the strength or the time or the energy or the confidence. Just ask for him, Lord, please give me the grace to do what you want me to do this summer. And I've also got this quote that has stuck with me for years, and it's, to squander your time is to squander your destiny. And so I kind of have always, I've adopted that as my life motto. I don't want to squander my time. That what I'm doing right now, this time, is going to affect me and it's going to affect people in my life. And I don't want to squander that. Instead, I want it to be fruitful. So those are kind of my two things for this summer. Good.
Yeah. I think that as I look at kind of the way I'm using my time right now, two things that pop out is one, that I want to be more intentional with maintaining friendships. You know, it's really easy for me when I get busy to just, you know, not see my friends or not show up at you know, different social things. And so wanting to really be intentional with, okay, who are the people that I'm really plugging into or that are pouring into my life, you know, and making sure that I make a priority of getting things on the calendar with them. And then also, you know, committing to pray more and to spend more time in prayer. You know, I think sometimes prayer too often gets shoved to the margins. You know, I'll pray when I'm driving from place to place, but really having that carved out time, you know, where it's like, okay, this is time that I'm going to, you know, pray for myself and for others. And so those are kind of two things that I'm going to work on.
Yeah, that's good. I think I already talked about the prayer walk, so I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to find some way to rein in the social media issue and find some kind of parameter for that. And I guess not just social media, but the email and all that kind of stuff, and just feeling like I have to be connected at all times. Ridiculous. And then what else? Yeah, I'll have to come up with a couple other things. I'm really going to sit down and write out that inventory of how I think I need to figure out a little bit more where I am spending some of my time, because sometimes on a Sunday night, I look ahead at my week and I'm like, I don't have a free night this week. And it's just very exhausting to me. It just sets me off in a bad, and again, they're all good things. One night's Bible study, one night I meet with a friend, you know, one night I may have one of these committee things that I'm doing. So it's just, what is that going to look like to be a little bit more focused and the ability to pour into fewer people and to do that well, you know, instead of the scattershot approach that I seem to have taken.
I like what you said, because I think, I don't know where this is at, somewhere in the Bible it talks about doing something with the spirit of excellence. Mm-hmm. And so being able to really give yourself wholeheartedly into one thing really does make sense, rather than try to spread yourself so thin to all these other things. And I think that's really a good plan.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully I'll be able to get there in some form. So yeah, go ahead, those of you out there, maybe write an inventory yourself and then let us know where that lands when we blog on this show. Comment on the post and let us know kind of what some of your time traps are and how you're willing now or able now, or you hope to kind of invest some more time in work for the Lord and in people, relationships, just being able to give up some of your time. Maybe that does mean opening your home and being willing to do that and carve out a little more time, you know, to get your place cleaned up so that you actually can host something at your place, do something like that. So I think it's good. And I think that it, you know, we see the rewards in that after it happens. And definitely more than, you know, I spent 4 hours playing World of Warcraft, or I spent 4 hours commenting on friends' Facebook statuses. Maybe we'll have a little better report of how, you know, what we reaped from that. So, good thoughts, you guys.
Atoning sacrifice, keeper of this life. Hallelujah, you are Savior.
Jesus, you are stronger.
Well, hey, everyone. For this week's culture segment, I am very privileged to have Bill and Pam Farrell joining me by phone. Welcome to both of you.
Hi.
Hi, Lisa. It's great to be with you.
I know. Very fun. Well, you are well known to the Focus on the Family, having been on our daily broadcast. But your first time on The Boundless Show, which is really, I mean, really, it means you've arrived.
I mean, and like, I feel like my energy level's gone up because I'm on Boundless now.
Well, I know. It should.
Yeah, I'm free.
Just and I feel cool and hip.
That is good, because that's what we do to people. We make you cool and hip and a number of other things. It just depends. So, well, very excited. You guys have entered our world. I mean, obviously, most of the people know you out there as the waffle and spaghetti couple.
Yeah.
That's your, like, your quick descriptor.
It's our hit song.
I know. Obviously, the book, Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti. You guys also wrote, I'm just going to say it, Red Hot Monogamy.
Yes.
Everyone's going to rush out.
Every young man's goal.
Everyone's going to rush out and buy that one now. Yep. And obviously, Love-Wise, you guys are spearheaded that. I want to make sure people know they can find that at love, and then it's -wise.com. So y'all can be stalking the Farrells.
Because we're connecting love and wisdom.
That's good.
That's why there's a dash, is we're connecting love and wisdom.
Well, and we need to do that for sure.
Yes,
even on the front end, even as singles. Because generally, you know, here at Boundless, we're saying most people are called to marriage. It's meant for most folks. And so if you're not called to celibate service, then what are you doing to diligently and intentionally move in that direction and allow God to, you know, leave you open to that instead of this languishing in weirdness? It's just not okay. So fortunately, fortunately,
yeah, we don't want anybody languishing in weirdness.
Yeah, languishing
in, creeps the rest of us out too.
In weirdness and lameness. I know. Well, no one wants that. So it's not good. It doesn't make you dateable. So, well, fortunately, we have books like your most recent one, The 10 Best Decisions a Single Can Make. And I've obviously been perusing this and kind of gaining some of the content, reading it. And it's been very fun to see. And I think I was telling you guys on the front end just how this week on the show we're talking about this idea of sacrifice. And I know there's that, what I believe to be a misconception out there, that singles have all this time, and so can't you guys just do this and do that? And certainly you have all this time to serve others, but what we're finding is that we're strapped for time, and we're finding that keeping relationships and service and hospitality and those kind of things is a difficult thing. And I think one of the challenges that single people have is that many of us mistakenly wait for marriage to have XYZ happen. We think that, you know, well, right now we can just coast, or right now this isn't our issue, because once I get married, then I'll be able to do this, or then this is going to somehow be part of my story, or this is going to happen to me. And I want to get some insight from you two specifically on that subject, because obviously you're married, and obviously you have talked with a lot of single people. And, you know, kind of that whole concept of what does it look like for a single person who, you know, not just generally when you're talking about, okay, that as you get older and you remain single, you know, you're just going to get more selfish or more weird or whatever. I mean, we don't, sometimes that happens, let's be honest. But but I think we want to talk generally about what does it look like to be accountable and to have this whole concept of iron sharpening iron. How can that happen for singles where we are right now? How can, because a lot of, you know, people find out that they get married, you know, maybe late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, and they're like, wow, there were some definite transition things that had to happen and some things that we had to, you know, adjust in our own minds and in our lifestyles and stuff. And so I'm going to get your take on that whole idea, because we know that marriage is a, you know, it's a crucible. It's a place where a couple goes and they're going to be refined. There's going to be holiness that is enacted in the process. But for single people, we can pretty much do our own thing. So what do you two see in that?
Well, you know, the healthiest singles that we talked to when we surveyed folks, and we had a bunch of dinner parties is what we did for 10 Best Decisions a Single Can Make. And some of our friends are super healthy singles. They live a really, what I call, a well-rounded life. We call it the good life in 10 Best Decisions a Single Can Make. And the reason we say that is because they have said, you know, we want to be, to have a good life in the area of finance, in the area of our health, in the area of our relationship, and our physical, like how fit we are, in our spiritual life. And so there's 8 different areas. And the healthiest singles say, you know, let's get healthy in all those areas. And what we find is when you have that kind of a mindset, then you start hanging out with other people that have that kind of mindset. And those are really healthy people. Mm-hmm. And they tend to be those iron sharpening iron friends. Mm-hmm. Just by nature. They're like, hey, let's go for a hike. Well, what do you mean hike? I mean, I've just been watching TV or in front of my computer. No, let's go out and let's get going here. And, or, you know what, let's stop and feed the homeless. What? Feed the homeless? You know, I have my routine. And so it just, the hanging out with people that have that overall let's be balanced outlook on life, it takes your edges off a little bit. It forces you out of your comfort zone, which is a really good thing for every person, whether they're married or single, to be a little bit out of your comfort zone and challenged on a regular basis.
Hmm. And Lisa, what we have noticed is that the tendency of people, single or married, is to isolate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That as soon as you feel pain, disappointment, frustration, the tendency is to isolate. And so if you're going to have good relationships, and it applies to single or married people, you have to be deliberate about it. You have to choose that you are going to put yourself into relationships and keep yourself in relationships.
We say, you know, keep floating your boat.
Right. And so joining a Bible study, setting aside one day a month where you're going to invite people over to your house, maybe get a group of friends together where you say, hey, why don't we take turns and once a week let's get together, share a meal together, and we'll just take turns fixing that meal and hosting the meal.
And some of our friends who we really enjoy them as singles, they're very proactive. Like when I'm going on an all-girls kayak trip to Alaska that's headed by my friend Debbie, and she's single husband. She's 40, and she has a very active life. And the reason why is she has just decided that it's healthier for her to be in authentic relationship. And so she often plans fun adventures for both genders. Sometimes it's girls only. Sometimes it's just a bunch of guys and girls. And they do all kinds of things, from mountain climbing to snowshoeing to, you know, snowmobiling to the kayak trip, cross-country skiing. And she just thinks it's good to have folks over to the house. Let's have a bonfire. Just always holding out that social need that's there in the single world. And it is a sacrifice of her time. I mean, she could be putting that time into her business or that time into her own spiritual growth, but she reaches out past herself. And because of that, she has a very rich social life.
Mm-hmm. So what do you see as a good way that a single person, say with a good friend, and I know a lot of people use the excuse of, well, you know, I don't know them well enough to speak to them. Well, you know, sometimes you just need to. but going to a friend, someone who you know has kind of gotten into a bad place, or someone who is retracting, someone who's pulling out of fellowship, pulling out of community within the church, how do you approach that with someone when you see something, maybe they don't see it in themselves, and you feel you have to address it?
Well, you know, there's no smooth way to do it, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to just decide in your heart, you know what, I care enough about that person that I'm going to take this risk.
And usually that's the best way to start the conversation, too, is, you know what, I know that we're not that close yet, but there's this thing that I see in your life, and I love you enough that I'm going to bring it up, and I'm hoping you don't get mad at me because of it,
mm-hmm.
but I really care, and I think God cares about it, and he thinks you're a great person, and so do I. And so let me just, like, lay it out there, and you can do whatever you want with it. You can talk to God about whatever I say, but I just feel like I'm supposed to say it to you. And, you know, I have always seen that really honest candor work pretty well for folks when you lay it out, like, this is a risk for me as well as a risk for you.
Mm-hmm.
People then usually are not quite as defensive.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it helps everybody to say, how would I want to hear this?
Right.
Like, if I was doing stupid things or if I was isolating myself, how would I want somebody to approach me and confront me with it? And if we go in with that type of a mindset, it usually works out.
Yeah.
I mean, there are always times where we're always afraid, you know, that the person that we bring this up with is going to, you know, just kind of lash out at us and have some huge reaction to us, and that they're going to somehow ruin our life. And that seldom happens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every once in a while, people get weird and, you know, have a real strange reaction. But that's even helpful because now you know that person's really unhealthy.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And they really do need help.
Right, and you know for sure you should put up boundaries in that relationship.
Yeah.
But usually when you sincerely confront people the way you would like to be confronted, that's usually the start of growth in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And they generally look back on it and say, boy, that was a great turning point for me.
And, you know, it's this biblical, consider others as more important than yourself. And so the Bible says that's having the attitude of Jesus. And so if I think, okay, I'm going to get over myself here so I can talk to my friend. And I'm like, move my pride out of the way, move my risk out of the way, because my friend needs me to. That's what Jesus would do.
Yeah.
Risking enough to love. And I think that, just an example in my life, I had a mentor when I was a young college student, and last weekend I spoke for her church, and I would be teaching a biblical principle, and then I would say, and I learned this because I had a friend who said, da-da-da-da, and I'd look over at Tina, and then next spiritual principle, and I made this really great decision to quit dating losers. Oh, yeah, and I did that because I had this friend, and I looked over at Tina, and I just realized, wow, she was really brave. She was just a few years older than me, but she kept stepping into my life saying, hey, look at this verse. What do you think it means? Hey, look at this other verse. How will that impact your dating life? Hey, have you ever thought about like your future and ministry? Look at this verse. And she was strong, but in a super loving way. And I wouldn't be married to the man that I'm married to. I wouldn't have the family that I have. I wouldn't be writing the books that I'm writing. I mean, I probably would have ended up marrying somebody who is like an alcoholic that beat me. That's the home I grew up in. So I was headed to repeat the same pattern, except the friend stepped in and cared enough to keep pointing out areas in my life that didn't really line up to God's best for me.
Yeah. I think one other thing that you guys talk about actually in the book, The 10 Best Decisions a Single Can Make, you have a whole chapter on deciding to wait. And I think a lot of time we think of refining as something's got to be happening to me, someone's got to be speaking into my life, something's got to be. But actually, the process of waiting can also be very refining. And I like what you say here in one section. I'm just going to read it here. You say, you've lived long enough to know that life constantly takes. You're expected to give of your time, your money, your wisdom, your friendship, your skills, and your focus. In the process, you get drained, especially when you have to do things that are unattractive to you. It's a compliment to you that others want what you can give, but it also depletes your energy. To keep functioning well, you need a way to recharge and refresh. And then you quote from Isaiah 40, you know, the whole, they that wait upon the Lord. How do you see that as a refining process, especially for singles, and really, and what is an active waiting, and what does that look like?
I love when people wait and they're proactive while they're doing it. You know, active waiting is not sitting around, oh, you know, I'm going to wait until God FedEx a man into my front doorstep. Active waiting means, you know, I'm going to be out there, I'm going to make new relationships, I'm going to go experience new things, I'm going to take new classes, I am going to serve on new missions horizons. I'm just going to look for new ways to enhance my life and serve God. And that's active waiting. That's not panicked waiting, but just simply active. I'm going to do the next great thing. I'm going to do the next healthy thing and make use of this time. And I'm not going to, like, one of the things we talk about in 10 Best Decisions a Single Can Make is one is a whole number. So I'm not going to wait until I have a marriage partner to travel or to buy a house or to buy a car or et cetera. I'm not going to wait for my life to start. I'm going to start living my life now. That's healthy waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And Lisa, this subject's really dear to my heart because when I look back at my life, when I was 22 years old, I was just finishing college, and I was anxious to get into ministry. I wanted to be in ministry so bad I could taste it every day. And I was really frustrated that there wasn't just a ministry position sitting out in front of me calling my name.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to push things to get into a ministry position. And then a man sat me down and said, you know, Bill, what you really need to do is go to seminary. Like, you have not finished your education if you want to have a lifetime in ministry. And when he told me, like, I knew he was right, but I didn't like it. It's like, well, I don't want to do more education. I just want to go do ministry. But I heeded the call. And I spent the next 3 years of my life doing more education. So I read more books in that 3 years than I even thought were printed. And I spent more time learning about theology and learning Greek and Hebrew and all kinds of stuff about the Bible that I didn't even know people like spent time learning. And I look back on that time now. It was a very active time of waiting because I had to network with a whole new group of people. I had to learn a whole bunch of new information. But when I look back now, those 3 years raised my confidence level to a place that when I graduated from seminary, I was actually ready to do ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And that period of waiting made me so much, like raised my skill level so much higher.
And confidence level.
That now I just treasure those years of waiting.
Yeah.
And what I see as people is we're all in a hurry.
We shortcut ourselves.
You know, we want to be mature like we're going to be at 40 next week.
Right.
And rather than saying, I'm going to do what I have to do today to get stronger, and I'm going to do tomorrow what I have to do to get stronger, and I'm going to prepare myself for my opportunities so when the opportunities are there, I get to say yes to them.
Mm-hmm.
We just have a bunch of frustrated people in our world
who
say they're not ready, and then they're upset that their opportunities aren't coming.
Right. Right.
Because they've gone passive rather than saying, I'm going to spend every week I've got getting stronger.
Right. And I found that, you know, a lot of singles, you know, there was kind of a breakthrough for me when I was, it was about 8 or 9 years ago. And I had a friend who was living with me who I was kind of that person that always would maintain friendships. And I'm a pretty laid back, easygoing person. But whenever I came to an impasse with someone, it was a lot easier for me to walk away from the relationship. And
yeah.
She kind of didn't give me that option. One, because she was in my home. And two, because she was just an extremely intentional person who, bless her heart, was studying to be a counselor. All I could say is if people do not want to be in people's business, stay away from the counselors to be because they're going to get all crazy on you. And she totally did. And it was a huge lesson for me in learning what it meant to be in a relationship and have struggle and have disagreement and have, the ability to fight and not walk away. And that is really ultimately what a Christian marriage is, you know. And to move through in communication and sacrificing before one another and putting that before the Lord and humbling oneself. And so I think singles can definitely do that in relationship and actively pursue those things and to get into things that are messy and not be afraid of that because life, that's what a lot of what life entails.
Exactly. And, you know, when we were hanging out with the singles when we were writing the book, one of my friends, Kristen Ditchfield, she's also an author and she's single, and she chooses to live at home because her family does ministry together, and she says, I do that because I want my nephews, who are 4 and 5, to walk in, interrupt my day, and me have to regroup. I want my siblings to say, hey, can you help me out with this? I want my parents to be able to say, can you run this errand? She said, because I have seen a lot of times that people who live by themselves when they're single, it's easy to make the whole world do what they want to do when they want to do it. And she said, I just don't want to become like that. And so she intentionally puts herself out there. And, you know, sitting in my office right now is my intern, and she's a wonderful family, Rachel, and her sister have a real iron sharpening iron relationship. They're very honest with each other. And so choosing to let your family step in or putting yourself in a roommate situation when you don't have to, you could probably afford to live on your own, but you know what? I just need to have people in my life for that honing process. I choose to be in relationship.
And Lisa, forgive me for, like I have a tendency to go towards sports metaphors, so just forgive me ahead of time for doing this.
That's okay. I'll just doze off, and then you can wake me up
exactly.
When you're done with it.
If you were a coach of a team, you would never put somebody into competition if they're not ready.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have is a lot of people who just aren't ready for relationships. And so Jesus, being a great coach, he's holding those people back from relationships. And when you decide to do what you said, where you just get involved with people, and you get involved with people that aren't always easy to be around, it forces your skill level to rise.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had this guy come to me, and well-intentioned guy. He said, Bill, he goes, I'm really frustrated. I'm trying to have a relationship, but, like, no girl stays around with me. You know, like, ladies, they'll have one or two dates with me, and then they never come back. Like, what am I doing wrong? And I said to him, do you really want to know?
Because he wanted to give him an out, because he was going to tell him the honest truth.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, I really want to know. I said, well, your nonverbal communication skills are all wrong. Like first thing, your hand motion is way too big. Like anytime somebody sits close to you, they're intimidated by you because your hands are moving too big.
And he was a big guy anyway, so it would be easy to be intimidated to just because he's standing there.
Uh-huh. And then I said, are you aware that at the end of every sentence, your voice goes up? And it sounds like you're trying to sell something every time you talk about something.
And you're not a car salesman. You're a good guy.
And mm-hmm. if you want to project sincerity, you have to learn how to drop the tone of your voice at the end of the sentence. Because it will give people the impression that you're sincere. And we did a couple other things of body posture, the way he made eye contact. And he worked hard at changing his nonverbal skills.
Mm-hmm.
And coming up soon, he's going to be celebrating his second wedding anniversary.
A wonderful dad, great marriage. But he really asked for some hard things to be said to him, and then he moved on them.
Yeah.
And when you get in relationships, that's what you get. Friends will point out the stuff you're doing wrong,
mm-hmm.
and friends will point out the stuff you need to grow in, and if you're willing to accept it, you'll get ready.
Yeah.
And when you're ready, God will open the doors of opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that kind of dovetails into the one other thing that I want to talk about, and that's near the end of the book. You talk about the ability that singles have to be influencers. And I know you quote Elizabeth Elliot where she says, do the next thing. And then you talk about several different strategies for doing that and really how we can influence right where we are and with what we're doing. And you specifically talk about the value of people in this and about what it means to pick priority people and really invest in them. What would you say to singles as far as maximizing where we are right now with our influence and then looking ahead to where that will grow us in the future?
Well, I think my first thought, Lisa, is that it's what life's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Like God created each of us in this time in history because he has a purpose for us. Like he didn't look down and say, oh, I got an empty space here, I need some filler. And so I'm going to create that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He created all of us with this ability to influence the people around us. And so what we want to do is we want to figure out who those people are. You know, a good friend of mine says, we're looking for the people who are looking for us. That there's a group of people on earth that you can have a profound impact on. That they need your insight into life. They need the skills that you bring to life. They need the giftedness that God has given you. And there's an intersection point where your life and those people's lives are going to intersect. And it may be at church, it may be at work, it may be in a friendship circle, it may be out on a missions trip, it may be in a community project. But if you start looking for the people that you're supposed to influence, what you will find is you meet a lot of people and go, no, yeah, I think that's one of them. And so as you interact with people and you live with the question, am I supposed to influence this person? What it does, it takes your natural influence and it speeds it up. Because we all imitate the people that we care about. So mm-hmm. the friends you hang out with, you start to imitate them after a while. And if you get intentional about the process and say, I'm going to intentionally spend time with the people I believe God wants me to influence, it speeds up the process.
Yeah.
And you end up making a difference in other people's lives. And when you get a hold of that, suddenly you start to realize, you know what, my life matters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just looking for happiness. I'm not just looking to get through the week. I'm not just looking, to kind of survive this craziness that we call this world. I'm actually here to make a difference in people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And when that thought grips you, you view yourself different.
And you view your world differently, too. We like to look at the whole area of being an influencer like a competitor, a soldier, or an athlete in the Olympics. And when you have that kind of competitor attitude, that means I'm going to fall in love with the game. And what is the game? Why did God leave us here? Well, he could have taken us straight to heaven if it was all that worship, but he left us here because we're supposed to impact other people. Oh, okay, so that's the game. Well, how can I get the very best I can be at that? Do I need to learn new skills so I can share my faith better? Do I need to gain more compassion and maybe get involved in some social action? Do I need to understand my faith better and do something like the Truth Project? You know, how can I really understand this game that I'm in? And then how can I hang out with people who want to win the victory? And when you connect arms and link up with people who want to gain victory in people's lives, who want to win people out of darkness and into light and out of toxic into healthy, that's a pretty cool peer group to hang out with. I mean, they're like your friends, Lisa. And you become a better person when you have that forward focus. I want to be the best competitor for God I can be. I want to make a difference in this world. I want to leave a legacy. Leaving a legacy doesn't mean that you are single. One of the women that left a huge legacy, and over 300 of today's leaders were mentored by a single woman, Henrietta Mears. Big heart, big hat. She raised up some of today's best and brightest leaders, those who founded Camps Crusade for Christ and many of the chaplains of the Senate and many of today's authors. So you don't have to be married to leave a legacy. You can leave a legacy big time.
Well, I think it's so important, as you said. I mean, it kind of communicates that you need to find people who are in it to win it. And to, you know, who are going to do that and who are going to be active players and active participants at the table. I know that I've found it so funny when people tell me something that I've said or something I've done that impacted them, I'm always like, that's what you took away from that? What in the world?
Exactly.
Here, I have said all these profound things that you have not heard, and then that's the one thing you get. But it is true. But I think it is through sharing failures and through saying, you know, here's something where obviously I totally messed up, and here's something, you know, that I learned from that. And that you find that that's really when people are listening, I think.
Oh, yeah, when we share our authentic selves and say, wow, I was a pretty big mess, and this is how God redeemed me from the pit and put me on a solid ground and got me going forward again. Because people understand that. They understand, oh, yeah, I'm a mess. I get that. But how did you climb out of that pit? We want to have that rope thrown down to us.
To give you an example of that, Lisa, when I was in seminary, like Chuck Swindoll was kind of at his height of popularity. And we were attending his church. He was coming and speaking at chapel. And you know, we all wanted to know what Chuck had to say about life. And the one quote I remember from Chuck Swindoll through all those years is, where there's light, there's bugs. And it, for me, it summed up relationships for me. I mean, people are messy. And when you get involved in relationships, there's going to be bugs.
When you're walking in the light, the bugs are going to be attracted to your life. So you're going to have some issues to work out with folks. But you know what? Life's better in the light, even with the bugs.
Yeah, that's true.
And when you just set your expectation, I mean, we're all imperfect. And if you were perfect, we'd crucify you. So getting involved in relationships means you're going to be involved with very imperfect people.
Yeah. Like I am.
And by hanging around them, it forces you to get better.
Yeah, good thoughts. So, well, Bill and Pam, thank you so much for being part of our show and weighing in on this. Really, really fascinating. Like I said, very helpful, I think, for us to not only see that that there are things that we have to offer as singles and areas that we can grow right now, but also that we really that refining can happen in so many different ways, and we need to actively look for it and be willing to let God work on us in the way that He chooses to do that. So I think that's really huge. The book, again, is The 10 Best Decisions a Single Can Make, Embracing All God Has for You, by Bill and Pam Farrell. Check them out. Don't forget to go to love-wise.com to find out the latest on what they're doing, whether they're in San Diego or elsewhere. But I'm so pleased that you guys came and shared with us on The Boundless Show. We love hearing from couples who are kind of walking before us, and really that's our goal here at Boundless, is to learn from, you know, in a multi-generational setting and not just have all of us single people talking to one another, even though we do that too, you know.
But,
it's fun to do that. We get to go to Whistler, Canada for a singles conference in May, and so we're looking forward to that. It's a fun place to be with some fun people, and it's healthy to have lots of different kinds of friends.
Yeah.
So we're glad to make friends with the Boundless audience.
Well, y'all need to tool on by here to focus at some point when you're on your way through Colorado so we can meet
Sounds good.
In person. So we'll plan on you doing that.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, thank you both so much.
Thanks, Lisa.
we are opening up this week's inbox, and I'm very privileged to be in the studio with James Groesbeck. James, welcome.
Well, it's good to be here, Lisa.
You are here again. Always fun to have you. And Sandy Jansen. Sandy, welcome.
And hello there.
You are back as well.
Happy to be back.
Very good to have you. So we always get fun questions from our listeners, and I'm always amazed at the variety of topics that people come up with to have us address, and we are privileged to have professionals here at Focus on the Family like yourselves who can deal with this, but also maybe inject some real life know-how as well as some humor into the conversation. So here we go. We're going to tackle this one. This person says, my boyfriend and I are planning to get married, and we've discussed where we would like to live a few times. We would both like to be near our families, but are open to moving. He would be content living in the city he and his parents live in currently, but I'm itching a little more for a change. We both currently live in a state with often very hot summers and frigid winters, and I would really prefer somewhere with more steady weather, as well as with beautiful scenery and a unique vibe. My question is, are things like weather and scenery and charm reasonable reasons for wanting to move somewhere? I can't think of any Bible verses or passages that talk about living in particular places, just that you have community with other believers. I would say I'm more inspired and feel God more when I'm surrounded by beauty, but is all that worth living away from family and friends?
Well, ladies first, James.
Well, absolutely. You just go for
it. All right, Sandy's going to go for it.
There are a couple of things that come to my mind here. First of all, there is the matter of common sense. In the economy that we live in, you can't just pick up and move. There needs to be a job at the other end because you have to pay your bills no matter where you live. And so that would be important. And communication with her soon-to-be fiancé, I'm assuming, would be really important that she share with him the desires of her heart and to not be afraid to do that, because that will set the tone for their marriage and their communication.
Hmm. That's good. Well, absolutely. I mean, she sounds like a precious individual that wants adventure. And she said she couldn't find any scripture. I would encourage her to go right back to Genesis. God created a beautiful world for us to enjoy. And creation is obviously part of that. And to be in a place that it really inspires your heart and your soul, gosh, that is so exciting. And I would encourage her to go for that. Now, it's interesting, Lisa, what she does. It's kind of like one or the other. And I would say both and which would be pursue the desire of your heart, which would be to be in a beautiful place that you could really enjoy, and also stay well connected with family. With so many ways to do that, it would seem to me that they could do both. So I'd say go for it, pursue it. But as Sandy indicated, you really want that to be a joint venture with her soon-to-be husband.
Yeah. And like she said, you know, to kind of think in a common sense fashion to say, well, is this really feasible for us? Because I think there is that element, and it's not, I don't know if it's totally communicated here, but, you know, sometimes being too close to family isn't a great thing, especially as you're starting out in a marriage, you know, especially if one partner is, you know, very tied to the family, maybe can't release the family, release the parents or whatever. And I know that's been a struggle for young couples and stuff. But at the same time, you want to honor your parents and you want to honor your family and not just say, I'm married, so I'm just done with you. So there's a balance.
Right. There's a balance there. And, you know, we've referred to things as being enmeshed or disengaged. Mm-hmm. And actually, we just want appropriate. Yeah. That means that you're actually, you're sitting with your family and someone pinches someone and you say, ouch, mm-hmm. That means you're probably too close. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, if someone kind of drops over dead, you sure want to be able to notice that. Mm-hmm. And but the idea is stay well connected with your family, but you also really need to establish your marriage. The ideal of Christian marriage is, of course, to becoming one. Mm-hmm. And so that's the goal. That's the thing you want to pursue. And families can really help that. They don't always have to be a hindrance to that. Mm-hmm. So that would be something else to consider.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, just because we have a few seconds left here, if you could address, I'm not sure this is totally implied in this question, but what if she approaches her husband and says, I want to move to this state because it's beautiful and I really think they've got a fun vibe there, as she describes, and he's like, no, I really want to be close to my family. I'm all about beautiful places, but that's kind of ridiculous. I mean, there may be some tension there.
And the tension would be need to be addressed, but I think it's also important to, at the age that they're at, as newly married, once they're married, mm-hmm. to take chances, to mm-hmm. take risks, to understand that, well, there's just the two of them before children come along. These are the years that they can really focus on experiencing life together, establishing their relationship. And when you are possibly living with some distance between you and a family, and life happens, and marriage in those first couple of years can be a challenge, then you are forced to rely upon each other and turn to each other, and that strengthens each other instead of making it easier for maybe if there's a fight or a dispute for somebody to run to a parent. Yeah. And so the two becoming one, mm-hmm. It actually can strengthen that, but it does depend on the couple.
Yeah.
My encouragement to them is to think outside the box and to have fun and to take advantage of these years together. And if they want to experience living in a place that they haven't before, to pursue that, if it's at all possible.
Good. Well, great thoughts. James and Sandy from our Focus Counseling Department, thank you guys so much for weighing in on this one. Very good.
You're welcome.
You bet, Lisa.
All right. That is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can address your question in a future show, whether by one of our counselors or by Wade Brown from our Pastoral Ministries Department or someone else, Candace, or someone else who's in the fray answering questions for us. So we want to hear from you. Obviously, we want you to keep listening, so do so. And until next week, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.